Hi everyone, let's talk about ArchISO. To jump right in, I've prepared some slides and we'll guide you through this now. Looking at the content, so first do like a short outline, talk a bit about myself, the past of the project, where else it is being used in the wild, what we have changed so far and what the future will bring. So my name is David, I'm a trusted user since 2017 and have been a developer since 2019. I mainly package Pro Audio things, Python tools, web applications and stuff like that. Whatever I do, I try to basically improve also on the documentation in our wiki, not only for packaging and tooling purposes, but also for our general workflow as developers or trusted users. In 2020, I took over maintenance for ArchISO. To explain what ArchISO is, it's probably best to kind of segment it away and explain those parts separately. So ArchISO is basically a collection of makeinit CPAO scripts which define the behavior of the image being created. ArchISO is also a script to create an installation or live medium. This is called makeArchISO. This is actively in use to create your monthly installation medium. Recently, we've added the script runArchISO, which can be used for testing an image in a virtualized environment to boot either into BIOS or UEFI-based systems. ArchISO is also a set of profiles that define what is being installed in the image in use. ArchISO is quite the old project and has been with Arch Linux for some time. In 2006, Aaron created the SVN repository and committed all the initial stuff basically. A lot of work has been done since then, and roughly in 2009, Gerardo took over and maintained the project until 2019. When he stepped down in 2019, we could not initially find a new maintainer for the project. I looked at the codebase and saw a lot of things to be able to be improved, which is why I took over the maintenance in 2020. The project has been moved from SVN to Git and has mainly been developed on the Arch Relang mailing list. When looking at all the source code, you probably wonder what is all this and what does it do? At the core of the project, there's makeArchISO, which does all the heavy lifting. There are two profiles that ship with it, called Baseline and Relang. Relang is the one that is being used for the monthly installation media. Each come with a build-sh script, which still call the makeArchISO script to generate the image. We'll come to this in a little bit. Each profile also has an overlay directory, which is used for files and directories that are being put into the root file system of the image after packages had been installed to it. Additionally, there's customize AI rootfs, which basically is a script to alter and do stuff after you've installed the packages and copied files from the overlay directory. With a distribution-specific project, it's always interesting to see who else uses this, actually. I've scraped the internet, found a bunch of projects and also derivative distributions that actually make use of ArchISO. There are a few special-purpose projects that basically just build a specific image, such as the System Rescue System or Talking Arch, which provides accessibility features for blind and visually impaired. There are a few spin-offs of Arch Linux that basically have chosen their own path. Most notably probably Artix with their AR tools, or Chakra and Manjaro using Calamaris, or Manjaro using the Architect framework. ArchISO has changed quite considerably in 2020, and I'll try to give an overview of the most notable changes. Foremost, we have moved the entire project to GitLab. This is pretty great because it allows us now to use continuous integration and build the entire thing in a containered way. I can show you around a little bit. So, well, the project is now in Arch Linux GitLab instance. We can, of course, use a lot of interesting features such as doing continuous integration on merge request and automatically enforcing specific security schemes, as in only allowing to merge something with signed commits and etc. etc. It's pretty nice. So it really allows us to kind of at least work towards a way where we do not have to do so much manual stuff anymore for testing Arch ISO, which is where everyone wants to basically end up, I guess. Unfortunately, the downside of all of this is currently that the GitLab instance is not yet open for public. I mean, you can browse the code, you can clone the code, etc., but you cannot create an account there yet unless you ask Sven nicely for for an account. But I think this will soon change, and then we will have proper also social logins as options, opening the gates for basically everyone to contribute, which is pretty good and very much needed for this project. When taking on the maintenance of Arch ISO, I also looked into licensing the entire project under the GPL3. This was due to the fact that up until then, the entire project never had a license. This is pretty bad considering that all derivative works that are based on Arch ISO up until that point were basically illegal in most countries of the world. So when you want to relicense or license a project, you basically have to ask every previous contributor of the project for their permission to license their work under a specific license. This is what I did in May, and it took roughly 2 months or two plus months basically to really track down everyone. So roughly in July we had all the permissions together. So this is a great achievement because now people can actually unproblematically fork and download and modify Arch ISO without having to fear legal consequences. Quite early on, I replaced the included UEFI shell that was basically a download of a pre-built binary from GitHub with a properly built version that can be packaged. This unfortunately took quite some time because packaging the entire EDK2 stuff is not very pretty and doesn't really have a proper build system. It's very, it's full of really bizarre surprises, bizarre build system-ish type of scripts that build the entire thing but are really, really hard to grasp and not very well documented, unfortunately. But I'm nonetheless glad that we now have basically EDK2 shell as a binary that we can build ourselves reproducibly instead of downloading a random binary blob from the internet. One of the first actions to be taken out on the Arch ISO codebase was to apply linting and code sanitation using ShellCheck. As we have a large code base with bash scripts or ash scripts in the case of the initcpio scripts, we had to get rid of many code smells and general insecure handling of variables, for instance, non-quoted variables while deleting things. I can give some examples. So this used to be in Make Arch ISO, and there are plenty of other ones in the build sh scripts of the profiles where you have like plenty of un quoted variables that could lead to really undefined behavior in under certain circumstances. Well, all of this has been cleaned up basically and is by now in much, much better shape. A script was added, and I noted this before. Run Arch ISO is used for testing the images in a QEMU environment. In a longer lasting effort, we have started to consolidate the per profile scripts, the build SH scripts, with Make Arch ISO itself. This means that in the future, build SH is obsolete. To show you what that means, I probably best show you a version before the change of build SH scripts for the relang profile. So if we look at the build SH script, it mainly consists of a lot of hard coding and then many boilerplate functions that basically all do the same to some extent than the one for baseline, for instance. If we look at the baseline build SH, it is pretty similar. It has the same setups. It has the same functions, basically, with a few omissions. And that is just a lot of boilerplate, basically, that we removed and merged into Make Arch ISO. This is now based on the profiles that I mentioned probably earlier. And it is using this here to basically override whatever settings are the default for Make Arch ISO. The profile looks basically like this for Arch Relang, for instance, where we define the standard things that used to be hard-coded in the build.sh script, such as the publisher, the label, the name, the version, the install directory, etc., and the boot modes that we support. The build.sh script has now been cut down to basically only do this. Print out a warning about being obsoleted soon and executing a specific functionality in Make Arch ISO that will be removed in the next release. Let's have a look at how all of this works. I'm currently running the latest version of Arch ISO, which is 48.1 at this point in time. As mentioned earlier, Arch ISO comes with two profiles, baseline and relang. These are being installed to the system and basically consist of A, the AI rootfs directory, which is the overlay of files that are being put into the image after installing all the required packages. Here you can see that, for instance, it is used to enable services such as IWD or systemd, networkd, and reflector. It also features the customized AI rootfs script, which is being run after installing the packages and copying all the files to the file system. We have a set of custom scripts here that, for instance, let you see the installation guide or choose a mirror through a kernel command line option. Currently, it also still features the build.sh script, but this is the last version where this is going to be available. Additionally, outside of all of this, there are configurations for the various bootloaders. For UEFI, we currently use systemd boot, and for BIOS systems, we use syslinux. An interesting new aspect is the profile dev.sh that I talked about earlier. This file basically declares all the required information for the image to be built. Here you declare the various boot modes that you would like to have on the system, such as systemd boot in various options and or BIOS systems using syslinux. All of this used to be hidden away in a build.sh script or in Make Arch ISO directly. So we removed a lot of hard coding and put it into a profile configuration file. Building an image is now as easy as pointing MakeArch ISO to a configuration. I'm providing the verbose flag so we can see a bit more what's going on under the hood. The first thing that is being done is using Packstrap in a work directory to basically install all of the packages that we define in the profile. This is very similar to basically installing your system using this image. The step currently taking the longest is creating the initramfs image. This is due to the fact that XZ compression does not allow for multicore and being reproducible at the same time. Therefore, I will fast forward this step a little bit. After finishing the creation of the initramfs image, all the bootloader configuration is being put in place and the squashfs image is being created. Overall, we are left with a build time around 6 minutes. Running and testing the image is now also being made quite easy using RunArch ISO. Here I'm now preparing to boot the image using UEFI in a QEMO environment. We can do the same, just booting into BIOS by removing the minus U flag. So that's basically it. With all the recent simplifications and changes, there's still a lot left to do for the future. At a date in the not too distant future, I would like to move all FlySpray tickets to GitLab. This can mean just kind of referencing them in the GitLab project for Arch ISO, or outright closing them because they're super old. We still have many, many old tickets that have been opened several years ago, and some of them are maybe not even valid because they pose a specific use case that we might not even want to support, actually. And some of them just need to be worked on and properly figured out, actually. That being said, we already have quite a lot of very specific use case issues basically in the GitLab tracker. Here it makes it also easier, of course, to reference them in the pull request or merge request rather, and see whether they have someone working on it already or not. FlySpray kind of lacks all of this and is also a very old system that we eventually want to get rid of course. We have a lot of old documentation lingering that we need to convert to restructured text and make available more easily to the user, either browsing the repository or using ArchISO locally. Some of these have been around for a long, long time and basically describe the standard workflows that are being established when using the initcpio scripts, for instance, and what can be used to modify them and their behavior. But these are not the only pieces of documentation that are lacking currently. We also have still gaps in the new workflows that we have designed and worked on, considering the profiles, although they roughly already describe what and how they work. And the tooling is also more or less well documented, I would say. However, I think workflows can always be described in a better way. While the per profile build.sh script is for sure going away in the next version of ArchISO, this might not be the case for the customized AI rootfs script that is being used to do post-installation and post-overlay file system modifications to the image. To know why, we probably should have a look at how this is being handled in the scripts and what they actually do currently still in these profiles. While this is already a solved problem, whatever the customized AI rootfs is doing is not yet. This is due to the fact that here we are modifying and generating the locale settings. This is something that is actually required or potentially required already during boot, and we need to test how this behaves when we, for instance, stuff this into a systemd unit that is being run at very early in boot. Meanwhile, the mirror list is rather easy to fix and to get around at, because the current situation is that we already have the entire thing being generated by Reflektor. While declarative profiles are already a thing, more or less, they will see some improvements in the future. While we currently have an overlay file system or an overlay directory that lists all the units, for instance, that we want to enable in the image, most of these are, of course, based on symlinks to the current root file system, which is not very pretty considering that we package all of this, basically. We have a lot of symlinks, for instance, in the multi-user target that all do not really relate to any files in the repository. We have an idea how to get around all of this by listing the files that we want to have and listing the symlinks that we want to create. This will hopefully make things a little more clear. A, for some probably rather controversial idea, is to maybe add Arch install as a simple terminal-based user interface for installation. This would be an optional package basically used in the image to allow templated installations of Arch Linux. To show you why this would be a good idea and how this all works, I can show you around the code base for a little bit and a video. So in the codebase, we can basically find a few profiles that allow for certain use case installations. This would, of course, not be for everyone, or would not be something that might be used by everyone or should be used by everyone, but it would be an easy and fast way of installing things without going through the hassle of typing a lot of things. It's probably best to show a video. As you see, this offers an easy way of installing Arch Linux, because having rather declarative profiles that do the same thing all over again that we ship is a lot more controllable than someone's random bash script that does a very specific installation but doesn't really help the greater community, basically. This has the upside for being an easily scriptable thing that is optional and can be used or not by users wanting to install Arch Linux. Earlier, I mentioned the Talking Arch project as a project providing accessibility features for the Arch ISO image in a specific way for visually impaired people and blind people. The current maintainer, Alexander Epanechnikov, just opened a merge request, so I better get on reviewing soon. Which is pretty awesome, given that we've been basically dangling around with these fixes being up in the air for a longer time. And I really hope we can merge this soon. Reproducibility is not only important for the packages that we build and provide with Arch Linux, but also, of course, for the installation media. Patches for this were already provided in the past to at least better the situation, but the codebase has changed quite drastically since then, so they were not included yet. Also, since we're now moved to GitLab, we want to further the automation and image release process of the entire thing, which means that maybe in the future you'll have a daily release. At the moment, releases are still being done manually by our release bot, release manager, Pierre Schmitz. You might have seen the tooling he uses for all of this on GitHub. I sometimes do pull requests for it because I change things in Arch ISO that affect his tooling, of course. This is basically how all of our install media gets deployed and built. And we want to automate this, of course, so that not one single person has to go through the monthly ordeal to provide this and run this on the clock. Rather long term, we probably move to Dracut or something that is not init.cpio based anymore. But for this, first we have to split out init.cpio anyways. A rather long-standing issue that we're trying to resolve currently is how to provide secure boot support out of the box for something like Arch ISO, and also how to sign our kernels. On FlySpray, we have a ticket that has been open for quite some time, outlining many of the ideas and things that can be done basically to achieve this. One of which was provided by Jonas Witschel, who is one of our trusted users, is to get a signed shim, which is a preloader basically for the bootloader that we use, which in this case is systemd boot, but could also be grub or whatever. This is also already packaged in community, but we require a signed EFI binary. We currently have an unsigned one, of course, because we do not have a signed certificate yet. The EFIs The shims can basically be signed then also via Red Hat Boot's project. This is all rather complicated and also time-consuming, and anyone who works on this, of course, always does that on their free time. So bear with us until this is solved. I don't really have a fixed estimate or timeline for this yet, so we'll see where this leads us. The changes introduced by us to Arch ISO, of course, also have an effect on derivative projects. However, I believe that the changes that were introduced are actually for the better. They allow people to much more easily create profiles than before, and only require MakeArch ISO to actually build an image. Branding and modification is basically being done in a profile by now, and therefore build.sh and also MakeArch ISO do not need to be modified anymore. Closing, I would like to add, please get involved, because there's still lots left to do, and the more eyes, the better. You can reach me on XMPP or IRC or via email. And if you have questions, shoot. That's basically it. Have fun using Arch ISO.
First of all, thank you so much, David, for your talk. We're here now to do the questions and hopefully some answers sections as well. And my name's Thor, and I'll be taking you through the questions today.
Yeah. All right.
I think we'll just jump straight into it.
Mm-hmm.
The first question is from, well, I'll, I hope I'm not neutering the pronunciation, Energy Creator, wondering why host the Arch ISO project on GitLab instead of GitHub?
Well, it's to be fair, it's our own GitLab instance, of course, that we host on our own infrastructure. GitHub surely has some nice integration, but at the same time, it also ties us to this platform, basically, that we would rather be independent of, and to also move into future directions of potentially auto-creating images in secure build environments. We actually want to be able to self-host that, of course. And GitLab has very nice integration for many things, actually nicer than GitHub in some regards, I would say. That's maybe like a, I don't know, personal preference or something. But it definitely has to do with us being in charge of our own infrastructure.
That's a good one. We have another one from Arashio 4. Wondering if there were any specific reasons why the GNU public license version 3 or later was chosen, I imagine specifically for Arch ISO, and wondering if something like the MIT style license would encourage more adoption.
I mean, the question is, I guess, why would you not use a GPL license for this? MIT, of course, offers a fairly great integration also if you're maybe a company, etc. If you really want to retain certain privileges on the code base. But I have the feeling that for a Linux distribution, it makes much more sense to be as open as possible and to be able to share all of that knowledge as openly as possible. Plus, it allows us also to maybe code share and basically knowledge, do knowledge transfer from all of these sub projects that have been trying to do their own thing. But it's makes much more sense to me actually to be able to get some of that knowledge back and retain features in Arch ISO itself again.
Yeah, there was that discussion about copyleft versus the other alternatives. We have a question from Sven Soto asking, will Arch ISO stay a shell, or will Arch remain a project that uses Bash as its primary programming language? or shell script. And do you have any rough plans to change that?
I mean, we have like behind the scenes probably discussed or like kind of talked about this sometimes more in a jokingly fashion as in we need to rewrite everything in Rust. But it increases the barrier of people being able to basically work on this. The Rust knowledge in general, I would say, is probably lower than average people's Bash skills, I would say, or Python skills. So Python might even be a more suitable thing to use here because it's also easier to do tests and sanity checks and stuff like that. Bash can be really, really bizarre and very indirect and dangerous also. So I understand that people would like to change, and I'm actually open to that. But at the same time, currently we're still trying to kind of streamline the entire thing because it drifted apart and became this kind of feature creep that had like lots of open-ended things going on in many directions. And we need to clean that up first, I think, to really understand what the core features of that thing is and should be. And then we can think of doing something else, I think. Yeah.
We have a question from Makelano. How is it determined what software is included in the ISO?
I think I skipped over that actually in the in the talk. There is a package file, packages.x64_86 that defines what packages will be installed for that profile. I didn't look into that file during the presentation, I think, but there we list all the packages that will be installed to that ISO, basically. That would be the place where you define, like, okay, I want, I don't know, KDE, Gino, whatever, installed on that thing, and then start modifying it more.
Yeah, I have to admit, I've accidentally forgotten to install the Wi-Fi software requirements more than once when I've set up laptops.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that happens.
We have a question from Lurst. I think it's been answered on RSC as well, but it's basically asking how one can install run Arch ISO, which is the script in the Arch ISO package.
Yeah, exactly. It's included in the Arch ISO package. I think I mentioned this quite early on, but it's maybe a bit indirectly mentioned. So if you install Arch ISO, you will have run Arch ISO as well.
So Pac-Man's your friend there.
Yeah.
This is a bit of a longer one, but I think it's a good one. From Diabonas, are there any plans or ideas to run automated installation profiles, such as full disk encryption, logical volume management, or LVM RAID, in the continuous integration pipeline to make sure that not only the generated disk image is correct, but that the included software works as expected as well?
Yeah, that's a big one, and a very good question, actually. Thanks for asking that. It ties into actually two things. First of all, we of course need to actually have a proper CI pipeline to build this thing, and that's fairly non-trivial currently still, but I'm working on that. Due to us requiring root and a bunch of mounts for all of this Arch packstrap calls to install packages into this chroot, and that makes things a little complicated. But as soon as we have that, basically we'll be able to use some sort of artifact that we create there, the ISO basically, and use that to install further on. And I think that's something we should do. I'm not entirely sure yet how this will be done in the future, but it probably has a bit of like a disconnected pipelining thing going on where we just spit out daily images and then try to A, reproduce them properly, and B, boot into them, install things maybe into a fake environment and just run some tests. But this is really far ahead in the future, I would say. One thing that might help, that's the second part of it actually, is stuff like Arch ISO or Arch install being basically shipped with Arch ISO would allow this to be more straightforward or easier to do, basically, because you don't need to script all the things anymore because it's already there. But this is still up for discussion and an ongoing topic, because there are still lots of problems with an approach like this as well.
We've got a bit of an interesting question, I think, wondering specifically on how things are with regards to Dracut, as you mentioned in your talk, and collaboration with Red Hat. And it seems like this person asking PFactum tends to be a Red Hat employee and wonders mm-hmm. if you need any help.
Well, yes, I'm quite sure we would need help there, because I don't really have a Dracut-based system yet, and we currently actually have issues. I'm not entirely sure if that's Arch ISO related or that person's specific system related, where people running a system with Dracut on the host basically have an issue building the image. And So yeah, help is much appreciated. We actually, we are considering this, because we have a lot of initCPIO scripts, of course, that we currently also look into splitting out into a proper, its own proper project to separate it out from the entire thing, because it's not required during runtime. You only need it in the image itself, right?
That's true. We have a question here from U1106 wondering, did I miss where Arch Linux Bootstrap tar comes from? Is it the same project or package, or is it something unrelated?
Ah, the Bootstrap. Yeah. No, that stuff is generated by the things that Pierre Schmidt provides basically on GitHub. There's a link during the presentation. I will share the PDF shortly. That also creates this basically. And there it's mentioned how this is done. Basically just an extraction of the created image basically. I hope that answers it.
I think it does. There's another one from Oak, wondering, is there a way to run scripts automatically? I imagine in Arch ISO.
Well, there we would probably have to distinguish between during build time. So when you build the ISO image, there currently is still our customization script that is allowed to be run, but we are soon deprecating that. I'm not entirely sure how, because it makes things unreproducible. But I'm not entirely sure yet how we would allow this in the future. Maybe we provide a directory within a profile that you can put your scripts into, and these will be run automatically within the creation step of the ISO, with, of course, the downside that this will probably render your stuff non-reproducible. This is nothing that we would use then for the installation ISO. And otherwise, during runtime of the image itself, you can do whatever you want with systemd services or scripts that you basically provision into the root file system there.
And I mean, I'm trying to wonder like who could be doing this, but I guess this is probably more related to the internal use inside, wondering if anyone uses or tests the Pixie booting of the Arch ISO result.
I do sometimes, mainly when I'm breaking it. It's due to the fact that we, for instance, now changed the naming of the images that are being created by making it CPIO in the image. They used to be called archiso.img, etc. And so we're very specific to the ISO. And now we rely on the names that are given by the kernel package itself. So you could now install several kernels side by side, or you can install any kernel you like. It will always generate that specific kernel for you. The thing is just that PXE booting is a bit tricky, because it involves also modifying ArchWeb due to the certificates basically validating the images and so on that you download. So that's slightly non-trivial, and I hope we can improve on that a bit in the future, because that would be much appreciated.
We're close on time, but we've got time for a few more questions, I think. Here's one from, I think, a if not already, a potential future collaborator. Alcazar79 wonders if it's a good time to rebase on the latest version of OSHA/ISO, or if there are still a lot of disruptive changes coming up.
Oof, yeah, good question. I guess rebasing definitely makes sense now already. We currently finished on more or less deprecating build.sh scripts for the configs, the profiles. So we just remove them, but they're not being really used anymore anyways. So that's basically the biggest step. Just get rid of your build.sh script and you should be fine. If you have questions, I mean, you can always get in touch. If you run into issues with specific use cases, then please do get in touch on the mailing list, for instance.
I think we have time one more and then we'll probably round up. A question from Jerry Shao. I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation, so my apologies. But it says, OSHA/ISO recently added a service called Reflector, which is a package you can also download normally from Pacman if you like, which connects to the internet and sorts mirrors by speed without user permission. Is it against the KISS principle? Keep it simple, stupid.
Exactly. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I guess it is not against that principle because it actually allows you to have a functioning system right from the get-go. And as we, we can use Reflector. We could also use something else. If you want to do this manually, you can, of course, build your own ISO. But I have the feeling that it makes more sense to actually provide something that is functional from the get-go instead of having too many user interventions until you can actually install things. And that felt it made more sense to me. But yeah, if you have other, incentives about that, please let me know. I'm open for suggestions.
Well, with that, thank you for answering all those questions. And
yeah, thanks for hosting.
Thanks for the talk.
Thanks.